Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hey everyone. Before we get into today's episode, we wanted to share that our hearts are with those who are suffering after the recent school shooting at Annunciation Catholic School in Minneapolis, Minnesota, especially the families of the two victims, 10-year-old Harper and 8-year-old Grayson. Luckily, it appears that the 18 who were sent to hospital, the majority of them being children, are stable for now, and we hope they continue smoothly on their recovery process. Same for those who were there that day and had to witness such a horrific tragedy at such a young age. As Harper's parents said in a news statement, quote, "We urge our leaders in communities to take meaningful steps to address gun violence and the mental health crisis in this country. Change is possible, and it is necessary so that Harper's and Grayson's story does not become yet another in a long line of tragedies," end quote. There is a GoFundMe link we'll include in our episode description and on our social media pages. In the meantime, vote when it's your time to vote for people who stand up against gun violence, because this epidemic seems only to be getting worse. Share videos, attend protests, spread the word, and stand up for those who can no longer stand up for themselves. Be the community you would feel safe to be a part of. Thank you for your time, and let's get on with the episode. Check if my mic was placed well, but you haven't said what, so I think it works.
It works okay.
Thanks. Have you talked to mom and dad recently? Like yesterday, today?
No.
So, we had a fun little incident at our apartment yesterday morning. I'm watching a dog, which you saw in the background, and she started barking at like 4:30 in the morning. I'm like, this is not cool. So I go up to grab her, and I hear very slight knocking on the door. Like, this is creepy. So I check the camera, and it's this guy, and it's not a live feed. It's just like clips whenever it sees movement, and he's like kind of bending over, looking around, like kind of waving his arm around. And I'm like, he looks drunk, and I don't want to deal with a drunk guy at 4:30 in the morning. So I like wait a little bit, see if he'll go away, and he doesn't. So Chris gets up, and he goes to see what he wants, and the guy is our downstairs neighbor, and he's like, our apartment's flooding. What's happening in yours?
Oh my like, goodness.
It's not ours. And so like we turn on the light, lo and behold, huge puddle seeping in, getting closer to the kitchen. And we're like, okay. So like checking, and I have like a 5-gallon water thing for my plants. So I was like, is that leaking? But it wouldn't cause this much water. And it's not even full. It's not the aquarium. It's not the fridge. It's not the dishwasher. It's not the washing. Like, what is this? And we look out and the whole hallway is like flooded. And
oh,
so then
my word.
He goes wherever, probably go sop up his apartment. We're trying to figure out our stuff. And then Chris goes to the neighbor diagonal to us across the hall. There under the sink, kitchen sink pipe burst and is flooding.
Oh,
and
sweet
goodness. So it's their whole apartment's covered. It's seeping to our apartment, which is seeping down. And turns out we're on the third floor, but it's like kind of the fourth floor since the first floor is labeled zero. And it's seeping all the way down to floor zero and hitting every single apartment on the way down. It's spreading out. So we're like two apartments away from the elevator. It's seeping down the walls of the elevator.
Insane.
And no one can reach maintenance. There's no after hours, anything that can be reached. We're like calling all these numbers and they're like giving us all these different phone numbers and nothing's happening. 4 hours later, maintenance shows
sweet
up.
Heavens.
And the guy is like, yeah, I have like 100 missed calls and 80 voicemails. We're like, yeah, no kidding. He's like, well, at least it's not a river. I'm like, no, but it's a swamp and a waterfall.
It's
like,
definitely a creek.
What do you want? And so we luckily were able to sop up all the stuff in our apartment. Hopefully it didn't seep into the carpet. I don't think so. It didn't deal with, but we have like fans going and a dehumidifier. And I like mopped up the hallway, and Chris offered to help the neighbors, and they're
were overwhelmed, but they had like a lot of people there already, apparently, so they didn't need more help to get underfoot. And it's just like, this is insane.
Oh, that sucks.
And then having a dog and trying to like, I don't know if maintenance is coming. I don't know if it's our place. I don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to need to tear out stuff? The apartment is scarily underwhelmed by
this. That's brutal.
And I'm like, well, now we have to move before mold sets in, because clearly they don't care. And if it can seep through the walls into our apartment, it wasn't like just coming through the door. It was like through the walls. Who knows what kind of damage was done for 4 hours plus, because I don't know when it started.
How exciting.
And it was like, what a way to wake up to be waterlogged on the fourth floor.
Well,
Not a fault of our own.
I guess you live in a water park now.
I know, waterfront property.
That's
kind of like our
cool.
Rates are going to go up.
It might. Well, on that terrible note, hello.
Ahoy.
And welcome to the Under the Waves podcast, a show about all things housing, water parks, shipwrecks, and more on and near the Great Lakes. My name is Andrew.
And I'm Michelle, your waterlogged captain for the day. Welcome aboard this week's episode. So I've been wanting and waiting to talk about this ship for a couple weeks now. I'm glad we did the Grace Period series. But let's move on to another ship that recently made Great Lakes news with the end of her career, the MV Cuyahoga. Have you seen this one on your socials, Andrew, or is it just mine that's keyed
I
up
have,
to the lake region?
And it's very tragic. Very, yeah. Very sad.
Yeah. It's very sombering. It's kind of like, I think I mentioned it later, but it's kind of like the United States, the SS United States on her final voyage to, was it the Gulf of Mexico off of Florida?
Yeah,
where she's
like
going to be sunk, I think it's actually next year. Like, she's just kind of hanging out there for a while. I thought she already sank, but anyway, yeah, it's very sombering to watch the videos. But let's get into it. So the MV Cuyahoga was built in 1943 at the very affordable cost of $1.97 million. And that's, guess what that is today? And this is 1943.
I'm going to guess like $213 million.
$36.6 million. A little
yeah,
overshot.
You know, I was close. I didn't hit the under.
No, you definitely didn't. So that's just over $36.6 million today in U.S. dollars. MV stands for motor vessel and typically indicates that the ship is powered by a motor, more often a diesel engine. This makes the ship stand out from sail-powered or steam-powered vessels. We've covered this before, but it's kind of a reminder because we haven't really covered an MV in a while, and that's MV for motor vessel, obviously. These are more often used for cargo ships, such as bulk carriers and container ships, but it does still apply to passenger vessels that are, you know, powered by a motor. It's a little less common to say, let's go take out my family's boat, the MV Passing Wind, out in the water this weekend. But, you know, it's
it rolls
still
off the tongue nicely. Though.
Technically an MV.
Yes.
The Cuyahoga was a steel Great Lakes bulk freighter built by the American Shipbuilding Company, or AMSHIP, in their Lorain, Ohio location. At the time, they were headquartered in Cleveland, Ohio, and had shipyards in Lorain, Toledo, and Chicago. AMSHIP was originally a merger of a number of shipyard companies at the time, including Globe Ironworks and the Cleveland Shipbuilding Company. They merged in 1899, and by 1952, AMSHIP was the largest shipbuilder on the Great Lakes. There's a lot of S's going on that
surely
I don't appreciate.
You should let the writer know about this. Issue.
I think she's gonna keep it going. She don't care. She don't get paid enough to care. Unfortunately for AMSHIP, the decline hit right after they peaked in 1952. Lake shipping steadily declined, but the final tipping point was a strike that closed their major shipyards from 1978 to 1979, and the company eventually moved their headquarters to Tampa, Florida, and closed their Great Lakes locations in the 1980s. Sadly, the company filed for bankruptcy in 1993 and was sold off in 1995. The Cuyahoga, originally named the Mesabi for a few months before being renamed the J. Burton Ayres, was 620 feet long, which is 189 meters. She had a beam of 60 feet, which is 18.3 meters, and it had a depth of 35 feet, or 10.7 meters. Her capacity was 15,675 tons. Her normal operating speed was 11.7 knots, which is 13.5 miles per hour, or 6 kilometers per hour, and she was typically staffed with 17 to 18 crew members on board. Also, we found a new term for you, a summer draft. This is a nautical term for, quote, worst case loaded draft a ship can have, end quote. Basically, during the summer months, water is warmer and expands slightly, and this expansion causes it to lose a bit of density, and the ship tends to float deeper in warmer water.
Because of this, I never knew.
I thought you were just going to say, I knew that. I was like, how the heck did you know that?
I know that with, like, air density, so, like, in the winter.
This is the same thing?
It's the same thing, but I just didn't think about it, and yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, I didn't.
That's super cool. Science.
Who knew?
Probably the shipbuilders.
Well, they found out pretty quick. Because of this, the load line is lessened to account for the ship sitting lower in the water and not wanting it to ground. There are other load lines used for tropical climates. Water. You ever use your boat in water? It's
only
different.
On weekends and holidays.
Not throughout May. There are other load lines used for tropical climates, winter North Atlantic, freshwater, and other draft markings. The Cuyahoga summer draft, or midsummer draft, was 25 feet and 6 inches, which is 7.8 meters. So you can kind of see in this picture on the left, I don't know what the right stands for besides probably feet, and I don't know what the circle thing is right now, but the left side you can see like summer, winter North Atlantic, tropical.
If you're feeling exhausted, puffy, anxious, foggy, gaining weight, or just not like yourself, you're not imagining it. Women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s are experiencing massive hormonal shifts, and no one is explaining what's actually happening. I'm Katie Whalen, co-founder of Joy. I built Joy because I lived this. The fatigue, the mood swings, the weight changes, the confusion. Your symptoms are biological, not personal. And AI-generated lab reports won't fix them. Every Joy lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who specializes in women's hormones and connects every biomarker to how you feel. Energy, metabolism, mood, sleep, skin, weight, everything. Then, we personalize real solutions. Hormone therapy, peptide therapy, supplements, and lifestyle protocols. Get started at joyandblokes.com today. This month, new customers get 50% off labs, and you can add our estrogen face cream for just $1 with clinician approval. Use promo code podcast at joyandblokes.com.
Well, I don't know what TF and F is.
Probably tropical Florida and Florida.
Or maybe tropical fresh and freshwater.
Maybe. Either way, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's nifty. The Cuyahoga's keel was laid on November 20th, 1942, and she was completed and launched on May 15th, 1943. She was originally built for the U.S. Maritime Commission as a Class L6 SA-1 gearless bulk freighter under the World War II Vessel Construction Program. She had one deck, an arched cargo hold construction, 18 different loading hatches every 24 feet, or 7.3 meters, and was powered by coal-fired boilers and a compound engine that produced 2,500 IHP. We talked about nominal horsepower in episode 51, which was entitled Pop-Up Clowns and Aioli. Aioli. Did I do it again?
Aioli.
Dang it, I did it again! Aioli.
It's like me and what is it? What's the place in Ohio? I keep messing up.
Sandusky.
Sandusky.
Pop-up clowns.
Aioli and Sandusky.
Aioli. Here we're talking about...
No, the correct way to say it is aioli. You say aioli and I say Sandusky. No, Sandusky.
Aioli is correct.
Yeah.
That's what I just said.
So, oops. Jokingly, it's aioli and Sandusky. Ow.
Yes. Now I got your joke. I thought I said it right the second time, but I guess I didn't.
You did, but then you went back to the wrong, but that's okay.
Okay.
Papa Clowns and Aioli.
Here in this episode, we're talking about indicated horsepower, or IHP. Indicated horsepower is the, quote, sum of the power generated by each cylinder inside the engine, end quote. It's basically the measure of total power produced by engine combustion without taking into account any mechanical losses such as friction within the various components like pistons, bearings, etc. It's the potential output of engine power.
To me, that sounds kind of like when a car person's like, oh, it's 700 horsepower at the crank, like at the crankshaft, and it's like, yeah, but that's kind of like a mythical, magical number because it's really not what is. I don't know. It's not what
it's
is
the
actually
ideal
being output
number.
If
it's
you
not
took
actually...
if you took everything perfect and made it perfecter and had it just on an engine stand in a perfect scenario, yes, this is true. But in the real world, it's going to be a lower number, and that's just it's okay. It's okay.
It's the potential output. It's not what actually happens.
Exactly.
Interesting. Recall that nominal horsepower is the estimate of a steam engine's power based on cylinder size and the assumed steam pressure, whereas indicated horsepower is a theoretical calculation of the power produced within the cylinder. So clear as mud? Good. There's a lot of different types of horsepowers that I did not know happened. I just thought horsepower was just that, just horsepower. But there's like indicated horsepower, and brake horsepower, and shaft horsepower, and thrust horsepower, and effective horsepower, and nominal horsepower, and it's just so many, just so many horsepowers.
There's lots of horses and hearse-purs.
A lot of hearse-purs. So, yeah, she had 2,500 IHP. Hopefully that's good.
It's good.
The Cuyahoga, as the Mesabi, remember she was first named that for the first couple months of her life, entered into service on August 19, 1943 under the Great Lakes Steamship Company, homeported in Oswego, New York, but mainly working out of Cleveland, Ohio. Within the same year, her name was changed to the J. Burton Ayres. She was named after the then president of the Great Lakes Steamship Company, Joseph Burton Ayres. Ayres, the person, was born in Dayton, Ohio on October 8, 1881. In 1901, at the age of 20, he began working for the Brown Fleet. This fleet merged with several other fleets of ships in 1911 in what would become known as the Great Lakes Steamship Company. Ayres worked his way up to being the general manager of the company in 1934, then the president in 1937. He later worked as a chairman of the board in 1955 before retiring in 1957, and unfortunately Ayres passed away on February 22nd. 1962. So she was named after the then president of the company she worked for. Which, why name a boat for like 3 months and then change it? But I don't know. So we're going to call her the...
Maybe they didn't have a lot going on.
Like, we'll just call her the Mesabi. Just moment. Kidding. Let's call her this.
All that paperwork was fun. Let's run it back and do it again.
Exactly. So even though she worked a lot of her life as the Ayres, we're going to call her the Cuyahoga. From here on out, just to kind of not keep confusing ship names. So back to the Cuyahoga, she was 10th of 16 similarly sized vessels built in a 2-year period during World War II. Of the 16, there were two classes, the L6SA1s, which we mentioned earlier that the Cuyahoga was, and then the L6SB1s. The A1 type Maritimer class Fokkers were built by the American Shipbuilding Company and were the first boats on the Great Lakes to be constructed with a new cruiser stern design. This build also included a shorter stack, an aft mast mounted behind the stack, double compound steam engines, and a rounded pilot house. But that's not all. They were the only Lakers to be powered by a 2,500 IHP 4-crank double compound steam engine, which we said was the Cuyahoga. The main mission was to carry highly sought-after iron ore to the steel mills that were producing the tanks, artillery, aircraft, and other supplies needed for the war effort. In the case you were wondering, the B1 class, which consisted of 10 of the 16, were built by the Great Lakes Engineering Works, and the design was more the traditional counter stern, which is where the stern kind of goes up and out, as well as a tall stack, an aft mast stepped forward of the stack, a square pilot house, and powered by a triple expansion steam engine.
Triple expansion steam engine!
Too bad the Cuyahoga did not have one of those.
That's okay. We still got to participate. It's a good day.
Here's your participation trophy. So we're going to kind of breeze through a little bit of her life. Not much happened to her for a second, but after World War II, she was bought by Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. After the Great Lakes Steamship Company went out of business, which was kind of an end of business sale, if you will, She was then sold to the Wilson Marine Transit Company in 1966, where she worked for a year for the parent company before being moved to a subset called Litton Systems Incorporated. She was purchased by Kinsman Marine Transit Company out of Cleveland, Ohio in 1973. She was sold the next year to the Columbia Transportation Division, also out of Cleveland, Ohio. And here she was converted to be a self-unloader by Amship at their Toledo shipyard. This changed her tonnage from 8,578 gross tons and 6,472 net tons to 8,796 gross tons and 6,436 net tons. So it increased her gross tonnage and decreased her net tonnage. She could also now be called a self-charging bulk freighter. These are types of vessels that are equipped with onboard cargo handling systems that allow the ship to discharge release its cargo without needing the assistance of shore-based unloading equipment.
Usually, this was like an early type of like hybrid or something. I was confused for a second.
It just means she could load and unload her own stuff.
I realize that now.
She didn't need nobody else.
Phenomenal, but like, oh, she could self-charge. I'm like, whoa, okay. Like, we talking batteries here? Like, what are
What?
Batteries. Oh, hybrid.
I heard batteries.
Yeah, batteries.
Input, more input.
Trees of bats.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
She could load and unload. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
By herself.
She didn't need no help. She's an independent ship. Usually this is made up of a system of hoppers, conveyors, and occasionally elevators in order to move the cargo, things like coal, ore, and grain, through the holds to the discharge room that can reach out to shore or to other receiving ships. For the Cuyahoga, she had the following equipment installed during this makeover. She had a two-belt gravity-fed system with hydraulic gates, as well as a forward-mounted 250-foot, or 76.2-meter, discharging boom that could swing 100 degrees to both the port and the starboard sides. Over her working lifetime, she hauled many things, including stone, iron ore, coal, and other bulk commodities. Her unloading rate was 3,500 NT per hour, which is net tonnage per hour, and it's a measurement of volume, not weight, that can be offloaded from a bulk carrier. So in an hour, 3,500 net tons, that seems like a lot, but it's kind
that's more than I can do.
Same, you know, I haven't actually measured, but I don't think it's going to reach 3,500. No. There's a diagram, if we have enough space in our social medias, we'll include. It kind of shows a little bit of like the internal belt working systems and then the self-loading and unloading arms. Pretty cool. In 1975, the Cuyahoga's boilers were converted to oil-firing ones at the G&W Welding in Cleveland, Ohio. And then on December 16, 1979, she was laid up in Toledo and didn't operate for the Columbia Transportation Division again. I don't think they sold her yet. I think they just had her laid up for a little bit. But on September 10, 1980, the Cuyahoga hit bottom in Stoneport, Michigan. This grounding resulted in some extensive hull damage on the freighter, and she needed $737,000 of work done. That's just over $2.8 million today. And that was her first accident. The following year, on May 8, 1981, the Cuyahoga grounded again in the Detroit River while turning near the Renaissance Center. She was finally freed 6 hours later after being pulled out by three different tugboats.
Oof-da.
Yeah. She was laid up for 3 years starting around 1986, but on September 23, 1989, the Cuyahoga grounded again. This time off of Bois Blanc Island, this accident caused damage to two of her starboard ballast tanks.
If you're feeling exhausted, puffy, anxious, foggy, gaining weight, or just not like yourself, you're not imagining it. Women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s are experiencing massive hormonal shifts, and no one is explaining what's actually happening. I'm Katie Whalen, co-founder of Joy. I built Joy because I lived this. The fatigue, the mood swings, the weight changes, the confusion. Your symptoms are biological, not personal. And AI-generated lab reports won't fix them. Every Joy lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who specializes in women's hormones and connects every biomarker to how you feel. Energy, metabolism, mood, sleep, skin, weight, everything. Then, we personalize real solutions. Hormone therapy, peptide therapy, supplements, and lifestyle protocols. Get started at joyandblokes.com today. This month, new customers get 50% off labs, and you can add our estrogen face cream for just $1 with clinician approval. Use promo code PODCAST at joyandblokes.com.
She was taken all the way down to Toledo, Ohio for repairs. And for reference, Bois Blanc Island is just southeast of Mackinac Island in the Straits of Mackinac. So she had to go all the way down Lake Huron to Lake Erie.
Yeah, that's a really good hike.
Two of her starboard ballast tanks not working. It's kind of hard to tell from everything, but we think the Cuyahoga was dry docked off and on until 1995 due to it being a difficult time in the shipping industry, and perhaps there wasn't as much work that needed to be done. In 1995, she was sold to the Lower Lakes Towing Limited of Port Dover, Ontario, and enrolled as a Canadian ship, which is a process one source listed as being Canadianized, which makes sense, but never heard the term.
Hey, you were almost Canadianized.
I was only, well, yeah. Fun times. Thank you.
That sorry, is I meant institutionalized. I don't know what the right term is.
Institutionalized in Canada, Canadianized, same thing. And officially renamed the Cuyahoga in honor of the Cuyahoga River in Ohio. So I love how she changes from being American to Canadian and then gets named after an American river. Cuyahoga for the river means crooked river, which is debated which language actually had the word in it first. It's most thought to be an anglicized word from the Iroquoian language, most likely the Mohawk word Cuyahoga, which means crooked river. Another contender is the Seneca word Cuyahoga, meaning place of the jawbone, and that is possibly in reference to the river's sharp bends. Her new home port in Canada was Nanticoke, Ontario, and she was also the flagship of the Lower Lakes Towing Company. The Lower Lakes Towing Company, still around today, but now a part of Rand Logistics Incorporated, has the tagline on their website, quote, "We can go where the big ships go and also where they can't," end quote.
That's pretty all-encompassing.
Just cover all your bases. In 2000, the Cuyahoga was repowered with a diesel engine in Sarnia, Ontario. This engine was a 8-cylinder, 4-stroke cycle incline made by Caterpillar. It was rated at 3,084 bhp, and bhp is brake horsepower, or the measure of an engine's power output. And again, there's too much horsepower mentioned in one episode, or in the last two episodes, for my liking, but hopefully someone likes it. And we're going to fast forward to 2012. She was still in service for the Lower Lakes Towing Company as the sole survivor of the A1 class of Maritimers. All the other ones have been either destroyed or retired at that point. And then on May 23, 2023, an engine room fire broke out on board the Cuyahoga sometime in the late evening just north of Pelee Island in western Lake Erie. Doubled over Erie. In western Lake Erie. Reports of the fire started coming in around 10 p.m. and the ship's crew made preparations to abandon the vessel. However, all ended up remaining on board and the fire was eventually contained to just the engine room. On Wednesday morning, 8 of the 20 crew members who were deemed non-essential, ouch, were transferred to the Canadian Coast Guard vessel Cape Dundas. The remaining 12 crew were left on board the Cuyahoga to monitor the situation and ensure that the temperatures inside the engine room continued to drop, as well as evaluate the damage and potentially start making repairs. The Cuyahoga had just grabbed a load of stone from Marblehead, Ohio, and was on her way to Kingsville, Ontario, when this incident happened. Two freighters, the Indiana Harbor and the Radcliffe R. Latimer, a tugboat, a United States Coast Guard vessel from the Marblehead Station, and three Canadian Coast Guard vessels responded to the fire, as well as a helicopter from the United States Coast Guard's Detroit Air Station. There's a short 10-second clip from this helicopter that surveys the scene, as well as a 6.5-minute long Mayday call interaction. We'll post a link to the Detroit Free Press article that includes both of these. It's definitely interesting to watch and hear. I'm always so amazed. A fire is a scary thing. Obviously, no one had to evacuate. No one died. But everyone's so calm on the Mayday call.
Business as usual.
Mayday relay. And they're like, yes, come in. And it's like telling what it is, like, okay, well, we're going to send this boat over there. And okay, this boat, did you hear me? And everyone's just so chill and monotone. And that's probably what you want in a stressful situation, honestly.
Meanwhile, you're just listening. You're just like freaking out. Like, oh my goodness. Like,
what is it? There's a fire. Oh man, yeah, is quite intense. It's definitely different than any 911 call I've listened to, even though they're pretty good at being calm too, but everyone was pretty calm here. So yeah, we'll post a link to that that includes both the video from the helicopter. I think I included a still in it in this art on this episode, and then there's a Mayday call. The video is dark as it's night, but you can make out some ship navigational lights, including the Cuyahogas. The video was posted by @USCGGreatLakes, and part of the caption says, "BZ to all involved." And this means Bravo Zulu, and is a naval signal conveyed by either a flag or by either a flag being hosted. Host. I quit.
And that's all, folks. Have a great evening, and thanks for joining in.
We'll see you for part two next week. This means Bravo Zulu, and is a naval signal conveyed by either a flag being hoisted or over the radio, and it means well done. No injuries were reported in the fire, and the ship was left anchored before being towed to Kingsville, Ontario, probably to let off the load of stones, and then to Ashtabula, Ohio for repairs, which I think I just said it wrong again. I always thought it was Ashtabula, because if you Google it, it says Ashtabula. Everyone says that. But I heard today, for the first time ever in a video, someone said Ashtabula. So I think that's how it's supposed to be called, because everyone's commenting like, oh, you know you're from here if... And it's like, I think I've been saying it wrong, and I think I led you astray. I think it's Ashtabula. Ignore the H. Ignore the U. Figure it out. So if we said it wrong the first time, sorry.
We're not from there.
We're not from Ashtabula or Beulah. Email in if that's your hometown and how you actually pronounce it. Someone said Trashtabula. Spell it,
that's not gonna help.
No. I can do that. someone said Trashtabula. So that's not us saying it. That's someone else saying it. But someone's like, oh, if you know, you know. I'm like, I don't know. So, yeah, write in. Email us underthewayspodcast@gmail.com if it's Ashtabula, 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 any of them. Anywho, it's in Ohio. Only 5 months later, in October, the Cuyahoga was repaired and able to return to service. While we do know that the fire was under investigation by the Transportation Safety Board of Canada, we could not find any conclusion as to what started this fire. An MLive.com article that was published 2 days after the fire wrote the following. Quote, shipping experts say engine room fires are uncommon on the Great Lakes. Fires more frequently strike while a ship is being worked on at the dock during winter layup, end quote. They then proceeded to list two other ships that this had happened to. Little did they know, they had just predicted the fall of the Cuyahoga. This is the Cuyahoga after her engine fire, still being anchored out in Lake Erie before being towed. Almost looks like she's sinking, but I think it's just the angle of the photo.
Yeah. Either way, it looks kind of just like, I don't know.
Abandoned.
Lurking.
Da-da. In March of 2024, while the Cuyahoga was docked for winter in Ashtabula, a fire broke out in the ship's self-unloading boom conveyor system while a crew from the South Marine System of Westlake were using welding equipment to remove paint in the Cuyahoga's hold. Luckily, most of the other workers were on lunch break at the time and were able to evade potentially becoming trapped below deck by the fire. The rather large fire, which ended up irreparably damaging the ship's self-unloading boom system, caused the U.S. Coast Guard to refer the accident to OSHA, which is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. The ensuing inspection led to the South Marine Systems Company being cited for 15 serious safety violations and one other than serious violation, and the end result, a fine of just over $164,000 in penalties.
Oopsies.
Whoops. What's that OSHA song that was on TikTok a couple years ago? Or social media? Do you remember what it's like talking about violating OSHA?
Danger?
No.
That's from an old safety video of like, shake hands with danger.
No, I missed that one. No, it was something about like, violating OSHA. I'll have to find it. It was really funny. Didn't stick clearly.
If you're going
to
be dumb, you got to be tough.
Nope, these are all great anti-OSHA slogans.
No, I mean, it's like a good reminder of, like, you know, if you, you know, one of John Deere's slogans used to be like, safety, period, live with it. It's like, it seems very forceful, but like, I get what you're saying.
Mean, honestly, that's not bad. Hang on.
OSHA violations. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, I forgot about it. Hang on. Gosh, someone's sitting on one of those cameras. That's not good. Yeah, that song.
Yep, that one.
That was this slogan. But good contenders on your part. A few of these violations. Yes. A few of these violations were that OSHA found the company allegedly did not, quote, designate a competent person able to identify hazards, nor had a marine chemist present to test for hazardous atmospheres before welding started, end quote. Also, the company allegedly, because we don't want to get any issues with them, did not stop their work even when small fires started due to the working hazards and conditions. So they didn't have someone to identify any hazards. They didn't have anyone to be like, hey, is this setting off fumes that could spark fires? And then when small fires started, they're like, meh, doesn't matter. We're going to keep working. OSHA Area Director Howard Eberts from Cleveland stated about the incident, quote, fate, not South Marine Systems, helped the cargo vessel's crew avoid disaster. The company's failure to comply with basic safety requirements for welding operations and working in confined spaces exposed workers to fire, asphyxiation, and other dangers. South Marine Systems must review its training program and its work operations immediately to make certain everyone on their work crews can recognize hazards and safely respond to emergencies, end quote.
Yeah, and these pretty photos, dark, like, smoke. That's a fire.
That is intense.
It was cooking, for sure.
Yeah. Unfortunately. After this, both the U.S. Coast Guard and the National Transportation Safety Board also opened separate investigations of the fiery incident. Unfortunately, this time around, the fire damage was beyond repair, making this the final nail in her coffin. The 81-year-old shipping vessel was doomed. And so those listening know, we do see the connection between the ship being named the Cuyahoga and catching on fire twice, while the actual river Cuyahoga was the one who caught fire around 13 times.
So the ship was like, that's low doomed. Numbers.
No, well, she was doomed from the start.
I know, but like, rookie numbers.
She's once you hit 10 double digits, and then we'll
have a conversation.
Yes. Aside from the superstition, we'll save the story of the Cuyahoga River burning for another time. That being said, all Great Lakes have experienced their own tragedies. We get it. Don't come for us just yet. Let's give our Lake Erie friends only one tragedy retelling at a time. So we'll cover that story, or stories, plural, later. Another interesting thing we found on Reddit was from a user called Cowboy17, who a year ago commented on a post that included the pictures of the burned Cuyahoga, which we'll include in our socials. This user was saying that they worked in the warehouse industry where a lot of conveyor belting was utilized. The belts that are on these self-loading/unloading ships are super thick, and once they get to burning, the temps climb incredibly high. Essentially, it's like lighting a pile of tires on fire, and it can get out of hand real quick.
And also, like the photos, it looks like they set 13 piles of tires on fire. Like, it is,
it's thick, dark smoke. A lot of it.
Yeah, intense.
You can see it from a long ways away, especially in the flatlands of the Great Lakes. Another user, Cubist Hamster, said that they were an engineer on a Laker that's only slightly larger than the Cuyahoga, and on their ship, the main belt was replaced in 2023 during a winter layup, and the uncut roll of belt rubber weighed in at 26 tons of rubber, which there was not much left over once it was cut down to size. So this ship that was only slightly bigger than a Cuyahoga, probably similar boom lengths, had 26 tons of rubber that just burned up. That's a lot of tires.
Oof, damn.
The Cuyahoga, the boat, made news last month as of this recording, as we mentioned earlier, as she was officially retired from the workforce and made the journey to the Marine Recycling Corporation. She was towed there by a couple of tugboats and will be scrapped. Parts of her might still live on if there are some pieces that can be used in current or future ships, but most will probably be broken down and recycled. The Cuyahoga, much like the final journey of the SS United States, was widely videoed, photographed, and various drone footage was taken of her final voyage across the waterways. She was Canada's oldest Laker and the last classic straight deckers of her kind. The Lake Erie vlogger on YouTube described her as the, quote, veteran of a thousand voyages, end quote, who is finally headed home to rest after her life of being a, quote, living, moving monument to industrial strength and endurance, end quote. It's definitely a sad day for the Cuyahoga and for all of the former crew who served on this majestic ship over her long career on the Great Lakes, and to her, fair winds and following seas. So
very sad and tragic. Fortunately, no loss of life, but it's sad. There's some beautiful photos of it though, but
yeah. And they were saying, people were saying, like, it obviously happens in every ship's life, like, it comes to an end, but it's so sad that, like, to kind of be taken out by a fire and that it wasn't deemed to be worth remaking that part of the ship. But I mean, looking at her size, I think she's seen her fair share of weathering over the years.
She's done her duty. Like, it's time to...
82 years in total, I think.
It's impressive.
Yeah, that's quite a long time for a ship. So that's the story of her. If more things come out in time, then we'll definitely share that. But definitely wanted to at least, like, mention some things because it is a cool ship. And it's very... There's a lot of videos and pictures out there you can see now of her final voyage. A little harder to find details of her life. Other than I just straight facts, but there's a lot of details of her last trip. So if you want to see her in action, look up any photos and videos that you can Google her. Make sure you include ship. Otherwise you're going to get the river and that's not as interesting.
Yeah. Even though it caught on fire 13 times.
Yes. And we'll, that is a story for another time.
Mm-hmm. Well, last week's trivia. What percentage of the human body is water? If you wanted to get extra credit, you could tell us the percentages of water in our blood, brain, and lungs. The human body is about 60% water, which is pretty insane. The range can go from about 45% to 70%, though based on age, gender, hydration levels, etc. Your blood contains about 83%, your brain and your heart are each about 73%, and your lungs are about 85%. And because we also wanted the extra credit and went above and beyond, your skin is made up of about 64% water, your muscles and your kidneys are 79%, and your watery bones are about 31%. I feel like a piece of jello.
Surprise, I can sit upright right now.
I'd be just on the floor. And in case you're wondering why, the water in our bodies has several really cool benefits to it. It regulates our temperature through sweating and respiration, carries nutrients and oxygen to cells, helps the brain to manufacture hormones and neurotransmitters, acts as a shock absorber for the brain and spinal cord, cushions our joints, protects tissues and organs, and helps to remove waste. That's a lot.
What doesn't water do in our bodies?
Lubricate.
I thought.
Water is not a lubrication.
Oh, never mind. But you said that.
Try again next week. But yeah, this week's trivia, none for this week. So we'll see you guys back here for the next one later on. Steam on by next week for more Great Lakes and Shipwreck Adventures. Send us any stories you'd like for us to cover, as well as any personal stories you might have about the Great Lakes, a boating incident, boat launch ramp shenanigans. You get the idea. Those can go to underthewayspodcast@gmail.com. Check out our socials, such as Instagram at underthewayspodcast and Facebook underthewayspodcast. Also, feel free to peruse our website for all the sources listed under show notes, as well as maybe you could buy us a coffee. The link to that is www.underthewayspodcast.com. Any little thing is much appreciated, and we hope to make your day as much as you make ours. Be sure to like, review, subscribe, follow, and join us next week for more great times on the Great Lakes.
So many greats. Like Michael Jackson once said, I'm starting with the man in the mirror. So we're going to do just that. Share this with the person man, woman, non-binary.
Share?
Share this with the person, man, woman, non-binary, etc., 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 you see in the mirror. Not just you, though we do love and appreciate you, and if no one has told you yet today or this week, you're doing great, sweetie. No, share this with the other person you see in the mirror. Maybe not Bloody Mary, though she might have a fondness for our St. Peter's episode. We're also not talking about the stowaway who lives in a whole nother apartment on the other side of your mirror that you just happened to stumble upon after watching that one TikTok video of someone dropping something behind their mirror only to open it up, and instead of finding treasure, they find a hole leading into a barricaded apartment that looks still lived in but isn't part of the original floor plan, and now you don't know whether or not you should call the police, call the landlord, live and let live, put the mirror back in place, knowing that only a relatively thin level of glass separates you from who knows who, and wonder, have they ever seen your apartment? And worse, have you been in it when they did? Because there's no way that they can't know you live there, especially since it's not a mirror on their side, but rather a slightly covered hole. Oh gosh, can they see you through your mirror? No, we don't mean that, though they might enjoy any episode that mentions a stowaway. We're talking about the other people who you see in the mirror. When you're in a bigger restroom with stalls and there's someone else standing there awkwardly trying not to make eye contact back. Nothing says privacy like invading theirs, respectfully, and after they finish their business and wash their hands, and sharing an episode of a random podcast. Or maybe you work at a furniture store who sells mirrors. A big box store with mirrors? What about a thrift store with mirrors? Don't stand there haunting the space waiting for your next victim, we mean customer. But if you happen to catch a glance of someone in a mirror other than yourself, give them a thumbs up and proceed to share this episode with them. The whole encounter will make a lot more sense once they've listened to this.
I don't think much makes sense after that, but we're releasing new episodes every Friday. Unless whatever's in the mirror gets us before then. Until then, we'll see you next time. Fair winds, following seas.
Catch you next time under the waves. Bye.
Cheers and sweet dreams.
Have fun brushing your teeth tonight.
He's going to destroy every mirror in the house now.
If you're feeling exhausted, puffy, anxious, foggy, gaining weight, or just not like yourself, you're not imagining it. Women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s are experiencing massive hormonal shifts, and no one is explaining what's actually happening. I'm Katie Whalen, co-founder of Joy. I built Joy because I lived this. The fatigue, the mood swings, the weight changes, the confusion. Your symptoms are biological, not personal. And AI-generated lab reports won't fix them. Every Joy lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who specializes in women's hormones and connects every biomarker to how you feel. Energy, metabolism, mood, sleep, skin, weight, everything. Then, we personalize real solutions. Hormone therapy, peptide therapy, supplements, and lifestyle protocols. Get started at joyandblokes.com today. This month, new customers get 50% off labs, and you can add our estrogen face cream for just $1 with clinician approval. Use promo code PODCAST at joyandblokes.com.